A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know, from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already.
Broadcasting from the lush, but no, we're not broadcasting from there at all. We're broadcasting from like four undisclosed locations. This is a real spoilers episode 716, Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. I feel like I'm supposed to throw up a fist or
please don't do that.
Or,
nope.
No.
No, we're on video now.
We're on video. Don't do that.
So I'm in Atlanta, so we couldn't get into the house. I guess they could, but it would be a crime.
Did Marvel invite you to take a tour of the studio there?
Sure. Let's say yes.
That's great tie-in for the episode. That's awesome.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I had to sign an NDA. I couldn't take any pictures. I can't share anything.
Sure,
but
of course.
It absolutely happened.
Okay. If you signed an NDA, you're still signing the NDA.
Yeah. There was a retina scan. It was a whole thing. I guess let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
This is Tom.
This is Rick.
And this is Rick. Rick is joining us via the magic of ZoomTube, although we're all magical today. Hey, Rick, how's it going?
Great. Thanks for having me, guys.
So you should tell us a little bit about your background because it's pretty impressive.
Oh, well, I wouldn't say that, but thank you.
Well, we would.
Yeah, based on who you're talking to right now.
Yeah, absolutely it is.
I'm actually from the Atlanta area, which is weird that you're there and I'm no longer for a few weeks.
He fled when he found out I was arriving.
Yeah, so I've got a little bit of a history with Marvel Studios. You can check my IMDb's, but I worked on quite a number of things in the last 5-6 years-ish. Not Black Panther. I wouldn't be on here for that. So officially, I'm not here from Marvel at all, by the way. I'm just a fan of Marvel, and I'm a fan of your guys' show, and making this happen. So thanks to Kevin for that. But what do you want to know? You want to know, like, what should I name off for you guys?
What have you worked on?
Now I need to look up my own IMDb. So a couple years ago, I worked on Thor Ragnarok. That was my first Marvel project.
And what was your role on role? What was your role there?
So back then, I was sort of on set doing something called NCAM. It's like a visual effects tool.
Okay.
I'm not sure if Marvel is using anymore, but I'm not going to go into details on that because that would take way too long.
Sure.
And then I ended up moving from LA out here to Georgia to work on the Infinity War and Endgame movies. So that was a long one because, you know, they shot both of those together.
Sure.
And then after that, I ended up becoming an assistant editor. So I was doing dailies on those Marvel movies. And then I became an assistant editor and been doing Marvel stuff as in that role for a few years. So whatever the Disney Plus stuff was, Falcon, Winter Soldier, Loki, Hawkeye, Miss Marvel, some more coming up that I won't be able to talk too much about yet.
No She-Hulk, though.
I did not work on She-Hulk. No, that was some friends of mine. A lot of these things, they're all shooting in Atlanta, but they're happening at the same time, and they each have their own teams. So if you're on one, you can't really get on the other.
Oh, sure,
one.
Sure.
No, that makes sense. That's awesome, I mean, Disney Plus, for the Marvel stuff, they've had some great shows. Like you said, Falcon and Winter Soldier, Loki, Hawkeye, Miss Marvel. I mean, I've enjoyed all the Disney Plus stuff. I think we all have. I don't think they've had a miss yet.
It's kind of the same as the movies. You come out of every single one going, right. That was like pretty decent. And then a week or two later, you're thinking, yeah, but how do they compare to all the others? Because they're all like pretty good.
It's I think we've said that, like, even the lower tier Marvel stuff, you're still like, it still was a fun movie. It was still a good time at it.
Yeah, you're not watching it again.
I need to watch Thor 2 or Iron Man 2 again. But
they're not bad movies.
That's
what we always say. It doesn't, like, if you're trying to rank them, first of all, it's really hard with the amount of them and the quality.
Especially now.
But when you talk about the lower tier, just because technically there has to be if you're ranking anything, none of them are bad. You know, obviously there's that whole DC versus Marvel thing, which is absurd that it has to even exist.
It would be versus if maybe the other person was putting out quality content.
But then it could be fun.
Right.
But they, you know, there are people that will hate on and give everything Marvel does a one, you know, if they're rating on IMDb, all that. It's so silly. It's like, no, none of these movies are bad. They could be not your cup of tea, but when people rate them like the 1 or 0.5 stars or whatever, it's like, no.
What are you doing?
I see on here one of your most recent credits is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which I'm sure you're not able to say anything about, but I know we're all really excited for that one, so that's pretty cool.
Well, you can get a little taste of that in a couple weeks when the Christmas special comes out.
Oh. Pretty excited.
Oh, you worked on the Christmas special?
They shot those kind of at the same time, yeah.
Okay, awesome.
Oh, well, okay, that makes a lot of sense.
That will be fun. That is going to be really fun. And it's crazy. I mean, obviously, I'm sure you know the news, but with James Gunn going between Marvel and heading up DC now, that's wild.
It is pretty wild that someone's managed to navigate that successfully.
That's really, really cool. I mean, it's crazy to think that, like, the door opened up over there and he went over there for a bit and then he came back and still was able to do the Guardians 3 and the Christmas special and then hop back over to DC and run the joint. So it's pretty
neat. At a certain point, if you're important enough to either, then they're going to figure out a way to make it happen.
Yeah, it's cool.
It seems like he is. So,
you know, here's something I haven't heard anybody say, and I don't pay that much attention to Twitter even before all the late crazy stuff.
Bonkers, man.
So maybe someone said this, but I feel like James Gunn is our best hope at getting a cinematic Marvel DC crossover.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Oh, I mean,
Could you imagine the amount of money that would make?
James Gunn has made these wildly successful Marvel movies that everyone loves.
He's got friends in both camps now.
But he set the tone for MCU, right? Like, after Guardians, everything kind of had that comedy feel to it, and it really changed the tone of the movies. Then he jumps over and makes the Suicide Squad and Peacemaker are great. Some of my favorite stuff at DC. Now he's heading that place up. So he's made quality products on both sides. He's obviously a great filmmaker. And I totally agree. Like, if anyone can do it, like, I mean, yeah, he's got the connections.
Can I tell you what I would rather have? Is, like, don't give me the Avengers versus the Justice League, but, like, give me one character and one character. Hmm. Like, give me Spider-Man and, I don't, you know, not the Flash. But the Flash, if that makes sense,
he's
a different Flash, maybe.
He's gonna team him up with all their analogs. You're gonna have, like,
yeah. Give me a Hawkeye and a Green Arrow.
Right. Really.
I mean, that's what they would always do in the comics, right? Yeah. They'd always team up Superman and Captain America or Batman and Moon Knight.
Right.
They would always have
Superman and the Silver Surfer all day.
Yeah.
Oh man.
I'm guessing just because of how much work it took to get Spider-Man in the MCU, it might be a long shot.
That's also very true.
Completely other studio.
But eventually, when they start to see, I'm not saying it's going to be tomorrow or anything, but if the numbers start kind of petering out,
they'll have to figure something out.
The quote unquote superhero fatigue, which I don't think
we keep talking. We keep talking about it, and it's yet to happen.
But if it ever does happen, you know that both studios are going to be like, hey, we've got this idea.
You know, you've got a space cop. We've got a space cop. What can we do with that?
48 hours
with the Green Lantern and Nova all day.
So I do have a good James Gunn story if you guys want.
Sure. Heck yeah.
This is before Guardians was shooting. Actually, it was when Suicide Squad was shooting. I used to be the guy who ran the theater for the screenings at Pinewood Studios.
Oh, nice.
Dope.
And they would just send him, the studios would send James Gunn, like, movies to watch because they want him to watch stuff. And so we'd set him up for him on Sundays. And I watched the Academy Award winning movies that year. It was like Knives Out one Sunday and Parasite.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
My joke for anyone who came through with these screenings was to say, the only movie they sent me was insert the kids movie of the week.
Yeah.
And I said, that week was, it was the Playmobil movie. Remember when that came out?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
vaguely,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Vaguely.
Did you guys talk about that budget? One?
No.
We did not.
The budget Lego movie.
So I made the joke while everyone was coming in, like, hey, sorry, they only sent me the Playmobil movie. That's the one you guys are here for, right? And he started laughing. You know, that was always a hit with everybody.
That's pretty good.
And then he's like, you know what's funny is my very first movie was a Playmobil movie. Because when I was a kid, I grabbed all those toys and was making little movies.
Oh my God.
It was all blood and guts and violence. Oh,
that's funny.
That's so great.
That's great.
So he launched into the story about how he was making a movie with those little toys. I thought it was so great, man.
You should have gotten a copy of it. I'm sure he has it on VHS somewhere.
You know what? That's a good question I should ask if he had that. So he was talking to somebody else about, yeah, I made Suicide Squad, but part of the deal was I wanted it to be R-rated. And so they had to, you know, come to that agreement. And I said, so if you ever make a Playmobil movie, R-rated, right? It would have to be.
Perfect.
It's definitely in my
contract. He's even bigger now. It's NC-17.
Yeah.
So you might, yeah.
He might get it unrated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It would be so good.
So we should probably do shameless plugs. Where's my Word document? There it is. Don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you find a podcast. You can find us while you're there. Be sure and follow us so you never miss an episode. Maybe leave us a review. That's always helpful. You can also share an episode, which is super helpful and a great way to let like-minded people know that we exist. So here are people who are kind enough to share an episode this week. Librarian Cynthia, Lane LeVanway, Ralph Tribble, Chris Sanders, Gabriel Lugo, Travis Tewitt, Tom Dowdy, Tammy Lynn Powers Betts, Chris Valls, Chris Magic Man, Julianne Jordan, Heather Sachs, Dissect That Film, Christopher Rex, Chris Williams, Ken Holzhauser, L Is Not, Spoiler Piece Theater, Linda Wright, The Real Pete, Binge Movies, Mike and Oscar, Geek to Me Radio, Matt Naglia, Feel and Film, Ronnie Castle, Invasion of the Remake, Nguyen Lee, In Session Film, and Ryan Terry. So thank you very much for sharing an episode. And of course, don't forget, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month you get all sorts of bonus content, and we like you extra. So
we have a review, too.
Oh, how about that? Oh,
yeah.
Is it worth reading, or are we going
to
cry?
No, it's a good one.
Okay.
5 stars over on iTunes. Great podcast, though they sometimes segue into other films for 10 to 20 minutes.
No.
Kind of annoying. Other than that, I love it.
Yeah, you'll come to love that.
All right.
Like, people at first are like, what are they doing? And then eventually you're just like, oh, okay, that's...
It's just part of the show.
Yeah, it must be a newer listener.
It must be, yeah.
But you'll get used to it.
Real quick. I've left you guys a review before.
Have you?
Yeah.
On iTunes?
I didn't.
Wait a minute. Are you that guy that said 1 star, these guys suck, and then I put it on a t-shirt?
You're going to need to narrow that down.
Proud to say that was not me. No, you read it on the air. This was a couple years ago. I remember it was the Woman on the Train episode. At the time, you said it was the best review you'd ever gotten.
Oh, my gosh.
Whoa.
I think that was Tom O'Keefe. That was Tom's wife who said that.
Oh,
oh, dang! Maybe we need.
In fact, she's about to walk
back
behind me on her way.
Oh, there she is!
There she is! There she goes!
Thank you.
Yeah.
What was your username? Do you remember?
Yeah, I use my email address. It's RB Ives.
Okay,
singing snowman.
Yeah.
I went into all the inside jokes that you guys have, and you're like, "Dang, this guy's been watching the show forever," and I really have. I remember sitting doing dailies in the middle of the night on the Avengers movies and listening to you guys talk about the other Avengers
movies.
Wait a
minute. That's insane. Are you serious right now?
Yeah, totally.
That is
amazing. Oh my God, that's so great.
So we were a part behind the scenes of the Avengers movies.
Now, keep in mind, I listen to a lot of podcasts in the middle of the night.
No.
Hey, we're in the mix.
Yeah, we don't need that part. Just
yeah, we'll take it.
Well, let me ask you.
I look at it like this. When I worked at a grocery store a million years ago and I was like 22, there was this girl that worked there, and she was a legit smoke show. And one day, she comes up to me out of the blue, and she's like, do you want to go to the zoo or something with me sometime? I have no idea why. And we went on the date, and it was horrible. Like, it was just bad from beginning to end. But, like an Oscar, it was an honor just to have been nominated, right?
Sure.
To know for a brief period of time, I was in the mix. That's how I feel about that story.
All right.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
That's awesome.
It is crazy, though. I mean, the Marvel stuff, when did we... So we didn't do Iron Man. We didn't do Thor.
Yeah, well, I mean, so 2013 was when we started.
Man of Steel.
Right. But
so we're post Iron Man 2? Right?
We did talk Iron Man 2, didn't we?
We had to have. Because, well, it was, I mean, Thor, the Avengers was 2012.
Was it Thor 2 was our first? I remember something to do with Thor was an early one for us.
Yeah, possibly.
So, oh, Avengers is 2012, so it would have been right before. It yeah, I don't remember, yet. But I Thor
it was either
2,
Iron
though.
Man 2 or Thor 2.
Iron Man but that's 2 crazy was 2010. To think
that, oh, was it really?
Yeah. Yeah. Iron Man
well, maybe
3
the next time we're, it's a slow week, maybe we circle back so we can eventually
that would be
get
amazing.
Done all of these.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be good stuff.
But 2013 was Iron Man 3 and Thor the Dark World, so...
Okay, yeah. Okay. It's crazy to think that Rick was listening to us working on those Avengers movies. That's
so long ago.
That's
pretty cool.
It is so long ago.
So we should probably talk about the movie because I'm in a hotel room that I'll have to check out of.
Oh.
So.
All right.
You didn't get the extended stay, just in case?
I did not get the
extended stay. Well, yeah,
just saw your wife leave for the gym, so I know she's going
to
be there for
no,
a while.
She was back from the gym, so she was going to... wash the gym off of her, so, which is great. Which is I'm grateful because I got to sit next to her on a plane. So
yeah,
well, if you have to bounce, Real Spoilers has no budget for overage fees. So
you might have also, to take over the closing.
There you go.
Spoiler.
So I think
Black Panther. Dick.
This
go.
Is the movie that the Eternals wanted to be.
Hmm. I love Eternals for the record. So
I know you do.
So
and like
yeah, I quite liked it too.
I totally I respect your decisions. And your loves, but to
until
me,
now,
until right now, but this man, this is. I don't remember like this is a different move. This is a different tone than anything they've done at Marvel.
Yeah,
well, it had to be.
It did. It did. And
but we've never seen anything like this with any lead actor in a franchise passing away and them recognizing the character passing away. Like,
Fast and Furious.
No,
but they never
die.
Say that he didn't
yeah,
die.
Yeah, they don't they right? don't say that the character died, but right. they certainly address, I mean, you I know like, what they're getting at.
You do, but they don't but they let him ride off into the sunset. I mean, this is the
literally.
First time.
They right. really took it in the opening 5 minutes too, right?
Yeah.
Elephant in the room. We're just going to take care of this right now,
which is smart because they needed to. They yeah. I think if they
There's
had played
this game,
nothing
they could have done.
Yeah. But and this... also I think it would have been really bad if they had made the movie about him dying,
right?
You know what I mean. Especially right. since it would have all been off camera.
And they
but
do,
like,
they do sort of do that.
They,
but
it's more about his
the characters,
grief, about
right.
the grief and
yes.
their reaction to
and
his
the trauma.
Death. And
yeah,
they don't
you
even...
always wonder how are you going to kill a character off screen who's so important.
Yeah,
and it was really smart to say, you know what, we're going to do it from the perspective of the next main character.
What I also think is kind of brilliant is it's not Thanos, it's not Kang, it's not Dr. Doom, which I kind of was hoping was in this movie, but wasn't.
I was wondering.
But it's something completely relatable. It's yeah. cancer. And they don't say right. that it's cancer because obviously that's what really happened in real life, but they definitely allude to
I
it being
think
cancer.
They also don't want to paint themselves in a corner from a storytelling standpoint. Like if at some point they have a character that knows sure. how to beat that. You know what I mean? I mean that it's,
God
you know,
forbid
like,
they introduce Captain Mar-Vell.
Yeah.
And now we're
because,
all in
like,
trouble.
Because that's the problem with superhero movies with when something like from real life encroaches in this kind of manner is that like they always win their battles, right? And
sure,
so it's
sure.
like it, and they have all this advanced science, but yet like there's
this
still cancer.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's kind of a weird juxtaposition, or it's also kind of downbeat to say, like, no matter how smart we get, like, we're still going to lose to cancer. Like, that's...
Yeah. You know, there is something, I don't know, but there is something kind of relatable, kind of going back to what Joe said, though. Like, you've got the Black Panther, who is this incredible superhero and wins all these battles and fights with the Avengers. But at the end of the day, it's like, no matter what money, no matter what technology, there's still things that, I mean, you just can't beat. And I know
for
that's
sure.
kind of I know that it's kind of downbeat, especially in a movie that usually the superhero movie is going to bring you up in the end, but it is relatable because we face loss all the time, and it doesn't matter how rich you are, it doesn't matter how famous you are, that's something that everyone can relate to, losing someone. And so I think them doing it, I mean, obviously their hand was forced in this direction, but rather than recast, which, you know, I'm split on, like, I do think it'd be cool if the character could have lived on, but
spoilers, you don't have to recast him now.
Well, very true. But yeah. I'm split on it because I'm like, you know, they
just
recast.
Just got to wait 20 years.
But they recast Batman. They recast Superman.
Sure.
They recast everybody. And now you have this. Black Panther was a huge movie. You have a black superhero. It did tremendous for audiences. You know, people in the black community could see themselves. And then it's like, well, no, you don't get to recast and live the character live on. He's dead. And so I'm torn from that manner. But with that being said, the way they handled it was beautiful. The way that they handled grief and loss and the characters coping with that, a mother, a sister, a wife, a father, all of that from all the friends, obviously, and family, it was really handled beautifully. And I think with all of the cultural stuff that they did in Wakanda with the funeral and just the different way that people grieve and celebrating life, I think that they handled it amazingly. So props to them for being able to take this real life tragedy and pay tribute to the actor, who obviously dedicated to Chadwick Boseman. And it was great just being able to see the mural and hear these people, the characters talk about him, when you know they're really also saying Chadwick Boseman, really.
I took my oldest to see this, and she picked up on that almost immediately. She said, when we left, I was like, you know, talking to her, and she was like, it just felt real, like the grief and all of the sadness felt real. And she's like, and she said, even, you know, she's 10, 11, and she was like, because it is real,
right? You know, all those actors are really grieving on the screen. And so
go ahead, Rick.
I wanted to ask what your guys' experience in the theater was like for that opening few minutes.
For me personally, it was like, it like immediately got me. Like I felt the tears welling up.
That Marvel intro.
The Marvel intro was pretty
amazing. With him in every letter, I started like my eyes were welling up when they did
in
that.
In total silence.
Yes.
That's the first time I remember wanting to clap and cheer, and also at the exact same time. Can't even breathe.
Well, you know? I could see it going either way. In my theater, again, it was complete silence, but I could see that where people want to celebrate Chadwick, celebrate his accomplishments and cheer for him, but then also it's like a moment of silence and this beautiful footage of him and everything. And they did a purple background, and every letter of Marvel was footage of Black Panther / Chadwick Boseman up there and all his scenes from the movies. It was handled so beautifully. Again, that and the funeral scene and everything. But yeah, I agree. It was good that they got out of the way for the story, but also the whole movie really is dealing with this loss and how different characters handle that and cope with it and sends them on different paths. And Shuri, who is, you know, takes over pretty much as the lead in this movie, she's got a lot to do here, and she gets more to do as the movie goes on.
I think that Ryan Coogler had an unenviable task, much like, oh good lord, the Conjuring guy, James Wan.
They did on Fast and Furious,
you know, like having to redo. And you can it's funny, as I was watching it, I was like, okay, these look to be like bits and pieces that were probably, it was supposed to be the Black Panther versus, right? Like that's what they were doing.
Definitely.
And you can definitely tell there are moments where I was like, okay, this is definitely like, we're going to take this piece out that was supposed to be Chadwick Boseman, and we'll just make it Shuri at this point. But he had to redo that whole script. He had to retool that whole thing and make it work and find a way to make it cohesive. And I don't think he's getting enough credit, much like James Wan, for having to, I mean, James Wan saved that franchise. Whatever that franchise became, like, it is what it is, but that franchise does not continue unless James Wan steps up and makes that work post the accident. Ryan Coogler is in the same boat here, and I think I always thought that Captain America, First Avenger, and Winter Soldier were like the best 1-2 punch that Marvel has ever done, and I think Black Panther 1 and 2 might be better. In the grand scheme of things, I think the Black Panther 1 and 2 are like perfect movies. You can't, like, this is a perfect movie. You cannot change anything about this.
See, I wouldn't agree there.
I'm going to have some changes for you.
I thought this movie really drags in spots.
I didn't feel it at all. It did not need to be
2 hours and 40 minutes. I also get that like they had a practically impossible task laid out in front of them, which is like, make a fun superhero movie about your main character
about grief.
Being dead.
Yeah, right.
And also, the actor is really dead. It's not just a contract negotiation and somebody wanted more money and walked away. Like you, and you killed off a character. Like you
got to figure it out.
Like you've got real grief hanging over. And so it's like, and I do think the movie is as well as it handles it, it also still suffers because it never really gets to be fun in the same way.
It's true.
Because it can't. And so like, it's hard to hold it against it, but it also doesn't change the fact that it's still, isn't fun in the same
tonally,
way.
Tonally, it's really
hard. Was
the
first Black Panther fun?
More fun than this.
I think Chadwick Boseman is so, here you go, Kevin, so cool.
He's so charismatic.
Smooth,
yeah, he's very charismatic.
That, like he has, you know, he has that relationship with Shuri, and like all of, he brings an era of fun. And I think, Tom, to your point, the scene that I think of when I think about fun is Shuri and the gal from the head lady, the head of the security.
Yeah.
Okoye.
Okoye.
Oh, yeah.
Go to MIT and find Riri. Like those interactions when they're out of Wakanda, I think are fun. Mm-hmm. And I think Riri Williams, who is kind of your new Iron Man.
Right.
If you have Invincible Iron Man, maybe I think it's like number 11. Congratulations, because that is now an expensive book. That character does bring an era of
some
levity, right? Like that's I think that's where she comes in. I think she's great as well. I think she kind of steals the show for me. I thought she was fantastic, but I do agree that this is definitely a much more somber, not typical. You know, it's crazy because Thor 4 was so over the top.
Yeah.
With the comedy, and this is like none of it. Mm. Well, and I mean, like it's very different.
And I also get that, like, if they had pivoted and done this like really touching opening scene, and then was like, enough all that,
wackadoo,
right. Waka waka,
it would like, undermine it.
It undermines everything that came before it. So, like, I understand the choices that they made, and you know, and a lot of times I'll sit here and be like, here's what they should have done. I don't know what they should have done.
Right.
Like, I don't have a better.
They probably
like,
did as much as they could.
It's an impossible task. It's
for sure. Like right now, I feel just, you know, like a politician. I'm going to tell you everything that's wrong. I don't have a solution, but man, that other guy.
I think you're right though when you say like they handled everything beautifully, but it is hard to change the tone. It's really hard to switch gears after they're dealing with all this grief and the real life tragedy. I do think they did a really good job with what they were handed. I think it was long. I think you felt the 2 hours and 40 minutes. I think closer to 2.
Was it 2:40 or 2:20?
Yeah, 2:40.
2:40. So 2:41, okay. Not that I was counting.
I think keep it closer to 2 or maybe even 2:20. I mean, I just think
Tom knows because of how many times he went to the bathroom.
Actually, I didn't pee one time.
Oh,
dang.
I know.
I finally got that bag installed. Nice.
Yeah, no, the doctor gave me medicine.
Oh.
But your day's coming.
Shut that urethra down.
But, you know, so I just think like they could have tightened it up a bit. There was, you know, and again, I couldn't exactly pinpoint where, but I think that there were a lot of moments where they just dragged a little bit too long. But I really enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I thought the action was good. It was fun. I mean, the introduction, it was Dominique Thorne plays Riri. I agree. I thought she was really good. And so we've got Ironheart now and you've got.
And she's getting her own show, right? Is she getting a Disney Plus show?
Did you work on anything for that?
I guess Rick?
Rick's over there like,
Rick?
Please don't ask me. Please don't ask me.
I thought they announced something.
You know what
her.
The look on his face was? Guys, if you ever want to know what you look like when your wife's like, do you think she's cute? Like that's what his face looked like.
Okay. It sounds familiar, but I don't follow all the you know, the
I thought
plan
that,
goes
I
out.
Thought that there was something. You know, they put out that 30-year plan and they've got stuff. You're like, what the hell is that?
Let's just say I don't think they introduced her for a one-off movie.
I can tell you it is in the news and easily findable that Ironheart has wrapped shooting.
There okay. we go. There Thank you. Okay. See, that's what we're talking about, Rick. So, that's the most diplomatic way to possibly say that.
So they introduce her and she'll be doing her thing. And you're right. She kind of fills that Tony Stark Iron Man void.
Yeah.
But you get her and Okoye and Lupita Nyong'o comes back and for this one who had this romantic relationship in the first one with T'Challa. And we find out, spoilers, that...
Man, you're going right you're going to the mid-credit
I was going
to
hold it for a little bit. Damn.
Well, I mean...
No, we might as well put it out there.
Yeah. The reason Okoye has been gone and left is because she was pregnant. And now that she has a son that she has talked to Angela Bassett and they kind of decided, let's keep him away. Let's keep him away from the throne, keep him away from Wakanda, let him live a normal life. And that's the scene that kicked me in the...
Yeah, like, so cards on the table. I cried twice in this movie, and it was the first scene and the very last scene.
I'm with you, brother. I'm with you all day. When the boy walks out and Shuri sees him for the first time, and you know as soon as you see his little head, you're like, okay, we know who this is going to be. And then when he says what his name is, his I'm not going to say like American name, but his not Wakandan name is, something very
well.
Normal.
It wouldn't have been, it would not be an American name.
It'd be like a Haitian name.
A Haitian name.
And then, his Wakandan name.
He says that my real name is T'Challa. And I was like, God,
I meant to look it up. The kid looks a lot like him. They didn't use one of his real
thing.
Kids, did they? I mean, that would have been a real gut punch. But they did a good job of casting because it made me think. I was actually like, oh my gosh, is this?
Yeah, he does. He definitely does resemble.
I was honestly wondering if they were doing something
to make him look
with CGI, because either
they did or he looks really close. But they did a good job with casting. And if it's a real son, then they do a really good job with casting.
Well done.
Well, it's Chadwick Boseman who gets the credit.
Sure.
Well, he's half the credit.
Half credit.
Well, if it looks like him, I don't think you can give credit to. Her.
Well, I mean, she did.
He gets the credit for the kid looking like him.
I guess that's fair. That's fair enough.
Science, man.
Yeah. We never purported that we were a science podcast here. So it sets up for the future where we have a T'Challa and an heir to the throne.
Right.
And we can have T'Challa be Black Panther and can set him up with Storm in the future because we don't know Storm yet.
But that's the end. I was going to touch on that. There are a couple like Marvel comic / MCU flipperoos, right? Because in the comics, I believe that Storm and T'Challa do have a child, and that's who this child is. We don't have a Storm yet, so they just substitute Storm for.
Oh, so you think that Nakia is substituted for Storm
for now?
Because this is set in modern day, so to wait for the kid to grow up, then we'd have to be watching Marvel. It'd be like 2040 before he could be with Storm.
I think that's the plan. Man.
This kid is going to be with Storm.
Well, that's what I just said. But he's 7, so I mean, we'd have to wait.
Rick,
till 2040.
Are we touching on some stuff that you may have already heard?
No. I'm just curious. Did you guys catch that line where our main bad guy said he was a mutant?
I was going to say, like, we get
what
the
do you
first
think about that?
Usage of the word mutant in this movie.
Didn't they use it in She-Hulk? Didn't they refer to somebody as a mutant?
And Ms. Marvel.
Oh, it was Ms. Marvel.
Because Ms. Marvel is a mutant, right? Spoilers. Yes. This is the first movie, MCU, where they say something.
I just didn't
mutant.
Know if they threw that word in there, to mean something.
I think they absolutely did. Especially because Namor in the comics is always billed as the first mutant.
The first mutant.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can we talk about Namor now then?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Because this has been sort of become a pattern for me in the last 3 or 4 Marvel movies where I kind of want the villain to win.
Well, they are giving you compelling villains.
They're even so good at that even halfway through the movie, I'm like, this guy has a point.
Right, for sure. Like, if you look at Black Adam, it's like they're bad guys because they're bad guys and they got to go out and do some bad guy, right? Yeah. And where in this movie, it's like, they have points. And even if they're maybe going about achieving their
the wrong
goal
way.
In an inappropriate way, but you still understand where they're coming from. I love the idea of using vibranium as like a natural resource that of course people would fight over, right? Because that's what we do. And so I love when they take these silly comic book notions, but then treat them as like, but what would people really do if this stuff existed?
Right.
That's what they would do is they would fight over it. So
plot-wise, we find out that the Americans and the French are trying to go after vibranium, basically, that they found under the water. Come to find out, spoilers for later on, but Riri, this college student, Riri Williams, has put together, she's a brilliant scientist, and she's put together a machine that can detect vibranium anywhere, so the government actually...
Without knowing what she was doing, right?
Right.
She didn't know what
correct.
It was for.
No, it's like she was just doing it. She was.
It's like real genius, right? She built the space laser.
She didn't know it.
Professor Hathaway tricked her.
So the government basically confiscated it from her college project.
Now, if only her thing could fill a house with popcorn. we'd be in business.
Oh, Rick, coming through. Look at that. Yeah. So good.
So now the CIA is trying to find vibranium with it. The French have sent mercenaries after them. And so all these people are trying to find vibranium, and come to find out there's a whole underwater, not Atlantis civilization.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, it's funny we talk about Marvel and DC having the same characters, basically. And I do like how Marvel says, okay, you beat us to the punch with your Atlantean king. So we're going to have to pivot.
Right.
Yeah, we're going to have to pivot a little bit. And they, instead of Namor being the king of Atlantis and the king of the seas, they make him from like this Mayan? Where did they ever say that?
I think they use the word Mayan. I think they're the Yucatan.
It's definitely more influenced. Yeah, right. It's more influenced by the Mayan civilization, which we talked about it, I think, just last episode or a couple ago, that when it comes to the mainstream popularity of these characters, people, general audiences, are looking at the movies.
Sure.
So even if Namor's first, Aquaman beat them to the punch by many years.
And he had a massive, massive movie.
So it was a hit. Yeah. If it had been like Green Lantern, they'd have been like, we're fine.
But he could still be the king of Atlantis. Don't worry about it.
But if you come out and you say he's, you know, Namor and he's an Atlantis, I mean, people are going to say that's just a copy of Aquaman.
It.
And so I think they were smart. And I think that the fact that they were able to have that different culture, I think it was great to bring in that side of the culture. And you bring in an actor who is Mexican, I believe. The representation, so you're getting a different side of it there.
It's crazy to think, because this was a character that I thought that Marvel was never gonna get. Like, this is one of those characters that I think was in the Universal deal and just sat there and was just sitting in limbo forever. And when they announced this, I was like, there's all the fanfare. Like, we got the X-Men back. We got the Fantastic Four back. We got Spider-Man. I don't remember ever hearing a word about Namor.
Mutants. He's a mutant.
Yeah, but
it would have been in the Fox deal, I'm sure.
I think he was with Universal.
Huh.
I think Universal had him.
Yeah, because even though he's considered the first mutant, he never really lived in that X-Men world.
Right.
Like, until recently.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But I think, man, the fact that they made the ankle wings work, and the fact that they put him in the green Speedo.
That was kind of weird.
It is kind of weird,
but it
works,
though, right? And so the actor
he's actually flying, but I'm like, is the physics behind this really?
Yeah, like, I don't think that's...
Can you maneuver like that with those tiny wings? Like,
he would just tip over and conk his head.
but you can't, in comic books and superheroes, you can't really, I mean...
No,
how
it is. It's
it
one. It's
how
one of the
Thor
most.
Fly with a
but
hammer.
There's some
I
things
mean,
that
he
there's some
it.
Things that look okay, and, well, and like that just looked weird.
I get it.
Yeah, these little wings going.
Yeah.
How would you not make it look? I mean, it is again the impossible task. If that's the character from the comics, they could have ditched him. But it's like, well, they made it kind of comic accurate. So, but the actor Tenoch Huerta plays Namor, and he's really good. And I was looking at his IMDb. He's a Mexican actor of Aztec and another origin I can't pronounce, but Aztec.
Hey, I was impressed with you got the name right. I was like, you were practicing
that. So they're bringing in that representation. I don't know what Purépecha origin. I'm not sure what that is.
I saw a meme that had a picture of Namor and a picture of John Krasinski's Reed Richards.
Yeah.
And the line is like, Sue is absolutely going to leave Reed for Namor. Like, there's no question about, that's a big plot point. Forever in the Fantastic Four comics is that Namor wants him some Sue Storm, and will make no bones about it in front of Reed. Openly be like, you just come be my queen and we'll hang out, and you know,
just fire it on her, huh?
Oh, nonstop.
So
do you guys ever talk about where have these people been all this time?
Like, actor-wise or the characters?
The characters.
Oh, yeah. Well, like, they're just chilling, yeah.
Well, at least with Namor, they do kind of address that, right? Like, they're aware of the upside.
They're
sort of doing the same
thing Wakanda did, where we're in secret because we're
so low profile.
We're not ready to open up.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering, like, did half of them snap away, too? And everyone's like...
That's a great question.
What happened to half of us?
I'm sure.
5 years later, they all come back.
They all
think
pop
it
back.
All
What's
is
happening out there? We should go
That's
check
a good
out
question.
It's the world's population. I'm sure they did. But, Yeah, I thought that he was really good, the actor that played Namor. I thought he did
nails that character.
I thought the look was really good. Some people were complaining about the look, and I thought for a grounded, you know, live action
complaining
version,
about how he looked. He looked fine.
Who do you think?
He looked totally fine.
The same people that are going to rate this a 1 at or 0.5 out of 0, whatever they can rate it. But no, the character design I thought was really good. I mean, I agree, the ankle wings, I mean, how do you do that? But I thought for what it was, I thought it worked pretty well for if they were going to do it. I don't know how anyone could do it better than that. Maybe you just don't do it, like Tom was kind of alluding to.
Was Namor always a villain in the comics? You guys help me out.
So he's always
flip back and forth.
He flips back and forth.
Okay.
He holds.
Even halfway through this, I was like, I can't tell. Is he supposed to be the bad? Are we fighting him? Or is there someone else going to show up here?
He was a World War II guy. So he fought alongside Captain America and the original Human Torch during World War II. In the comics, he's actually the one that finds Captain America in the ice. So he always has had a respect for Cap, but for everybody else, he's like, oh man, screw those guys. Like you mouth breathers, like, you know, that's kind of always been, his standpoint. He is definitely a hero at times, but other times he is a straight.
It seems like they're kind of setting him up to be that still. Like I could see him flipping to a good guy very easily.
Like you can pull him into your side on over certain issues. He will,
you know,
he will team up and fight a common enemy. And then, but then after that, it's back to like, go F yourself.
Screw you guys. Yeah. So he was part of the Invaders. That was the team that he was on.
So a year after T'Challa's death, they go to this like UN type thing, and you've got the Queen of Wakanda, Angela Bassett's Ramonda, is now reinstated as queen, and she does a great job in this movie.
She's so wonderful.
She says, we've obviously people are coming after our resources. The king has died, but make no mistake, Wakanda is still able to defend itself, and we are not going to take these attacks lightly. So the Americans coming after us. Here's your French mercenaries coming after us.
When she walks him into that. Walks those guys into the meeting room, man. And the
here's
look
your
on
men
the,
back.
Yeah. Yes, the look on the like the French embassy's gal. She was just like, God damn it!
Yeah, that was great.
Oh,
that was
so good.
Yeah, they're not putting up with this crap. But there was this attack. There was a really good fight scene where Okoye and her guard are taking on all these mercenaries. But basically, they're all coming after Wakanda. So this sets up this kind of conflict between everybody in Wakanda. And basically, all these guys coming after the Vibranium has now set off this alarm with... do we know the name of the place? Not Atlantis.
It's not Atlantis.
I just can't remember what the name of it is.
That's the name of it.
It's not Atlantis.
Not Atlantis.
I thought it had Namor in the name.
It doesn't. It's not Namor, but it starts with an N. There's something. Namortopia.
Oh, Nashville. Namor Island.
Namor Island.
Yeah.
So anyway, so they're now Namor has obviously been alerted. All these people that were exploring their waters were getting a little too close to discovering their civilization. So they take out all these like seals. Man, there's all these army operatives.
It is funny that Marvel has had these two like massive fight sequences on like boats. I think of the scene from Captain America 2 where they fight everybody on a boat, and then here I think it's a great introduction to Namor.
Yeah, I mean, like, it shows you he's not messing around. His whole
swinging that helicopter around.
Yeah, I mean, definitely not messing around. So now Namor basically infiltrates Wakanda when Shuri and Ramonda are out doing their thing, mourning. It's been a year since T'Challa's passing, and Namor just shows up through the water and is like, "Hey,
so good.
What up?" And basically says, "We need your help. You have alerted the world to Vibranium. Now everyone is coming after it. So because of you, they are coming into our land, and we need to protect ourselves against people." And basically, he wants to go on the offensive. He's not going to sit around and wait for them to take over. They're like, yeah, we need to take everyone else out on land. And of course, Shuri's like,
well, they come to the agreement that, like, you bring me the scientist who built the device, and we'll call it a day. Mm-hmm.
But which I don't believe he ever. I mean, his plan was to take out the scientists, but it seems like Namor's real motivations are to go on the offensive and stop. Because, I mean, he has her there, and he says, I'm going to kill Riri, who we find out is the scientist that built the machine. He's got her there. But
really, to what end? I mean, you can, I mean, Alexander Graham Bell is dead, but we still have phones.
Right. What was, you think just because she's gone, they're not going to build another one of these?
She's not like a vampire overlord where everything goes poof if you kill the head one.
They successfully kidnap her and they still build another one.
Yeah. I was like, all they have to do is go to Justin Hammer and he'll knock one out for him. Don't even worry about it.
That's why I think, I don't know if it was more of a justice type thing or whatever, but they take her, but he's got her there, and he says to Shuri, they also they have a fight sequence that leads them to abducting Okoye, gets knocked out and in the water, and then they take Riri and they take Shuri, and basically Shuri's like, hey, I'll stay here, whatever we got to do, like, let Riri go. And he's like, no, I'm gonna kill her. And basically, let me just level with you, we're gonna take out the whole planet. Well, like, I think
he's basically saying Atlantis and Wakanda can work together and we can burn it all down.
Yeah.
And,
I mean, that's what he said. He's not. Yeah.
No. And that is very much Namor. Like, there are moments in the comics where Namor is very much like, no, we're done with the surface world. We're not, like, you pollute my oceans. You do yada, yada, yada. It's very kind. You know, Aquaman kind of has a similar standpoint, but
He said they have more soldiers than there are blades of grass.
What a great line.
Which
what a great
line. I never
line.
Really saw materialize.
I think we do kind
it's
of see that.
It's also a weird
when...
metaphor for a guy who runs an undersea kingdom. Like, just going to throw that out there.
We do kind of see that, though, at the end, right? When they are, when the Wakandans are on that boat
and they just keep coming.
Overrun.
There are a lot of them, yes, but...
Is anyone else thinking, what a... interesting teaser for Avatar coming out in a month.
Are we going to talk about that? Did this steal Avatar's thunder?
It's so interesting that you've got Disney, the parent company, who obviously owns Fox and is releasing Avatar
with
next
underwater
month.
Underwater blue people.
And right, and the villains, quote unquote, of course, I mean, if they're against Wakanda, they're the villains, even though I know it's questionable, but these forces of underwater blue people, I just thought it was a really weird timing to...
They need a way to pivot all those Avatar rides in Animal Kingdom in case they lose the rights.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
They're the Submariner rides now.
Yes.
That's what they are.
Am I crazy or were they only blue above water?
You're not crazy. They were only blue above water.
I couldn't tell. I was like, are they regular underwater?
Which is what the Atlanteans in Marvel Comics are. They are blue. Yeah, they are normally blue. And I was like, I think it's a fun... little nod to the comics, at least, is you can make them blue and all that good stuff.
It was I noticed the same thing, though, because when they were doing the underwater scenes, I actually was having trouble telling which character is which, because I'm like, I think that was the big strong general guy, but he doesn't look blue, and clearly he's blue when you're above water. So I was wondering, like, am I confusing characters? But that no, they turn blue above water. We find out through a flashback from, like, what, the 1500s is Namor. Is that
so
old?
They're basically drinking. Which, again, like in Black Panther, the first one, right? We know that Killmonger burns all of the flowers.
The heart so shaper.
There can be no more, which is kind of a plot point in the very beginning, is that Shuri is trying to recreate the flower
stuff.
And she can't.
Whatever it was.
Whatever
because if they
it,
had
the,
it, if they had
they could
it,
save him.
It would cure him. Like the heart shaped herb, the thing is, that's their most precious material because it has the power to heal whatever ailments you have. And so with Killmonger taking that supply out, you know, that is what essentially leads to T'Challa dying.
Right.
And she just can't
synthesize
it in
time. It's only like 29% or 30% before he passes away.
And this is growing out of the vibranium, right? That's part of.
I think that's always kind of been the thing, is like the flowers are growing through like vibranium rich soil.
And that's
so in
what
a way they're ingesting the vibranium, and that's what's giving everyone these powers.
Correct.
Yeah. And so if, you know, flashing forward, basically there's a scene where Namor gives Shuri as this token of appreciation, respect, whatever, he gives her a bracelet that the mother wore, and they grew whatever the fibers out of the soil that was
it's a brilliant way to have to be able to bring those flowers back in.
It's a neat connection
without it seeming like, oh, we got to get these flowers back in, they're somewhere else,
right? So there's she's wearing this thing that she doesn't know, but there's a connection with the heart-shaped herb and the soil that it came from. So she's later able to synthesize her synthetic heart-shaped herb uses the fibers of that bracelet, and it's able to
T'Challa's DNA and figures it out.
Yeah. But so in the flashback, though, we see that the, you know, the settlers came in and killed all the people of their village.
Which is also, man.
Brought disease, just like the way it happened.
That's exactly what happens, right? And it gives Namor even more motivation to say F the surface world.
Right. Never trust any of them.
That's the part the colonizers. You're like in his shoes, right?
He's not wrong.
I mean,
it was the same with Christian Bale in the Thor movie where I was like,
I know.
I kind of want him to team up with Hero and destroy everybody because he's right.
Yeah, right, right. But yeah, so they drink the vibranium heart-shaped flower, and then in the process, it gives them gills. And they can't survive on land anymore, so they retreat to the water, and then they build their own civilization there. They leave this whole tribe of people leave the surface world, and they go build not Atlantis under the water. And Namor actually becomes the first born child to not have to drink the, like, his mother drank it while she was pregnant, but that isn't why he has powers. Like, it's not because of the vibranium. It's because he's a mutant, and so he was born with the wings on his feet and the pointy ears and the strength and the all of that stuff. That's all part of his mutant abilities rather than based on the flower, which I think is interesting.
But I'm guessing what she drank though did give him some abilities, like being able to breathe underwater.
Yes,
there's some kind of a connection where he had the mutant gene, right? It could unlock it, and so he had the mutant gene.
This is how they do it,
right?
This is how they bring in mutants.
Yeah,
they're gonna they wouldn't say all of this stuff if this there. We know Feige has a plan. Rick knows that Feige has a plan.
We do.
Yeah, so it like the fact that they are saying that Namor was exposed to this stuff, and we know that vibranium has landed in other places now. Now you're opening the door.
Oh, so you're saying it's vibranium that's unlocking the mutant ability everywhere.
Interesting.
That's what I
think. All right, put Joe on the record as...
All right, we mark it, yeah.
I also said the movies were going to implode after Ant-Man, so maybe don't.
He also said Guardians of the Galaxy was going to be their first major
failure.
Right,
right, so maybe don't do that. But so now we're in conflict. I will say that... as I'm watching this, I do feel like Angela Bassett should be nominated for Best Supporting Actress. She gives a performance in this movie, for me at least, that is...
Who did you say?
Angela Bassett.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It is
gut-wrenching. Do we get to the scene where she fires Okoye?
That's what I'm saying. Like, this scene here...
So this is basically, you're fired, give me your gun and your badge.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen anything so intense?
Oh, my gosh.
She is full of passion and emotion and rage and like all of those sadness and fear, and you can feel every single one of those emotions coming out.
Well, that was
her.
The speech out of the trailer too, right?
Oh, was it? I tried to avoid the trailers because I didn't want to get spoiled.
Same. I only usually watch the first one, but that was the one. This one's on another level.
It's phenomenal, though. It really is. It's a great scene. And Okoye, I mean, her reaction.
She's also another
Danny
one.
Danny Gurria. She like her facial expression, because she's sitting here taking this verbal.
And she agrees with her.
I mean, but she knows that she failed. She failed, right? Because when they go to get Riri from college, and then there's the attack from the Namor villagers and all that, like she loses the princess and they're just dealing, you know, they're a year ago T'Challa had passed, and now it's Ramonda's only other child, and so she has to come back and be like, I failed.
I know it's silly because this is a comic book movie, but she gives a performance in this flick that is just next level. I mean I don't think I've seen a performance like this in the MCU yet.
This is another level.
I think Tony Stark.
I think WandaVision had some of that stuff in it.
Oh, I could see that for sure.
I think Eternals had some really good stuff in it too. I mean, if you're
it had stuff in it, that's true.
You know, so
I couldn't think of the Eternals drum still.
I always will.
Hey, man,
I think it's beautiful.
Like, yeah, I get it. But I do think that she is on another level. She is an actor.
She's Angela Bassett, right?
That's exactly it.
they cast, when they bring Robert Redford into Marvel, when they bring these actors into Marvel, they don't stop being the incredible actors they were outside. Like, they are elevating this material, which obviously Marvel's really good, but you're bringing in that caliber actor and you're getting these performances.
But I think
the actors take it more seriously than they used to. I think in the past, this would have been a phone-in paycheck kind of a role. And I think now they realize that, like, oh, if I bring my A game, this will be better. Yeah. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you don't always get that. It was very sporadic as to how seriously a big name actor would take a role in a movie like this. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you'd get, you know, Marlon Brando in Superman or Alec Guinness in Star Wars, but sometimes, you know, you would get people just pulling up Bruce Willis and phoning it in.
Yeah. Well, earlier, Tom, you were talking about how them hunting this stuff underwater is like so silly. It's just like a superhero thing. But they take it more seriously. Like, okay, well, let's think about this really. What would it look like?
Yeah.
They've kind of convinced all the actors to do the same thing. Yes,
for sure.
It's silly. It's fighting.
Where do you think that flips?
I don't know. I feel like Marvel's always been going for that. Even the
MCU. Yeah, I really do. I think when you bring
they set it in a real world war, and
and you bring in Robert Downey Jr., who
but this is still a universal theme that we're all can relate to, or something that everyone in the world is dealing with. That's what makes it different.
Yeah, and when I think it started with the directors. When they got those directors, obviously Jon Favreau and Iron Man and everything, that was great. But you bring in Kenneth Branagh to do Thor, right? Thor could have been really, really silly live action. And you bring in Branagh, and you do it faux Shakespearean, and it elevated the genre. So, like, from the beginning, they've got the right directors with the vision, and they've turned the properties into these films that they, as silly as they may be on paper, they bring them to live action. You're like, wow, they actually pulled it off.
I wonder if the real kind of message to actors to take it more seriously, and that you can make it work if you're a good actor, was Heath Ledger is the Joker.
That's a solid point.
Because your mind immediately goes like, well, Jack Nicholson's a real actor and he played a Joker, but like, in no way was Jack Nicholson phoning in that role.
Oh,
but Jack
incredible.
Nicholson was very much like, I'm in a kid's movie.
Right.
Like,
yeah. He's being a comic book character.
Right. I'm doing a comic book thing, and I'll do Jack Nicholson on 11, but I'm doing a comic book thing, like whatever.
But for the record, Jack Nicholson in Batman is incredible.
Sure, but I mean, but it's not necessarily a serious dramatic performance in the same way that what Heath Ledger gave us.
Of course.
And so I think maybe that was the moment that made other people in the acting community
legit.
Hey, if we take this seriously, like this isn't just quote unquote a comic book movie. Like, there is real stuff here. If we as actors treat it with the same reverence that we do, you know, dissecting a role in any other kind of film.
Sure.
Marvel hasn't been afraid of touching on real world topics either.
For sure.
Right. Cause you talk about Black Widow is almost too far into sexual assault and exploitation.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Or what even the first Black Panther was all about slavery and racism and
Wasn't there which flick was it when Tony Stark is confronted by the woman in he gave a speech, was it Iron Man 3?
He killed her son
her son was killed. Yeah.
That was the beginning of Civil War, wasn't it?
Is that what it was?
But yeah,
that's why he kind of goes on the side of the Accords.
Yeah, all the different weapons. And I mean, yeah, and that's the commentary since the beginning, right? I mean, Tony Stark is an arms dealer, or was.
Yeah,
so, he was.
He's the military industrial complex.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah. And I do like that Tony Stark will forever be a part of this world because, I mean, Riri's first suit is built from Stark Tech.
Right.
And I love the fact that it's still got like the same sound effect. Yeah. As the Iron Man
scene,
it's still
blueprints.
Got
like, I was like, she's working on an arc reactor, clearly. Oh, yeah. And she's so.
I like the throwaway line about how she's like, there's a whole YouTube channel dedicated to sightings of me.
Right. Yeah.
That's funny.
Well, that's pretty good.
Point of information. So Namor is the king of Talokan. So it doesn't sound anything
Talokan,
like Namor.
That's right.
You're right.
Talokan, which is based on Atlantis and Talokan of Aztec mythology. So they bring in the Aztec mythology and, again, bring in that culture and that different side, I think is a lot more interesting than just saying Atlantis. right? So they
you mean
use.
You mean like
it sounds
it?
Like a telecommunications company from the 90s. Like, we're Telecon.
So Telecon. So, you know, it was just cool that they, I think that they brought in that culture instead of just going, we're also doing Atlantis. That way it separates from Aquaman and also brings in a new culture and representation.
And I do think it's kind of funny that it sounds like Momoa might be done with Aquaman.
Really?
I mean,
why?
James Gunn, well, he can't play two characters. Let's put it that way. And if James Gunn is going to do a Lobo movie, it's going to be Jason Momoa as Lobo.
Oh, he can't be both?
What, how was that?
I mean, they make
work?
One movie every 4 years. I mean, why wouldn't they be able to?
I don't know.
That's, it would be weird, though, if they try to cross him over.
Yeah. They're like, here's Aquaman and Lobo. Though I don't think that would ever be a crossover.
Yeah, that
anybody
would be a weird
asked
one.
For.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. But, I mean, unless they totally reboot things, I don't think you can bring Momoa. He's too big to play just another.
I gotta tell you,
I don't think you can do that.
If they're doing Lobo, it's gonna be Momoa.
I would bet money they don't, but I mean, never say never. But I just don't know how you have Aquaman is that huge of a character, and you're gonna say Jason Momoa is now Lobo. I just don't see any universe where that happens.
And
no
James
way.
Gunn's like, this is what I'm doing. Forget it. you already paid me. I'm writing the movie.
We'll see. We'll see.
So yeah. So. Now we're in conflict. It's, you know, Ramonda has fired Okoya, and then she has enlisted Lupita Nyong'o to come back, which I was like, man, I was kind of hoping that she was going to be the Black Panther just because I think she is fun to watch.
She's such a great
she's
actor,
so
too.
Good.
Lupita Nyong'o is so good in everything that she
so
does.
So great in this, and I do like that she's even apprehensive, and we just assume that she's apprehensive because she doesn't want to come back.
Yeah, she's done with that world.
And
she's done.
We find out that
she
that's
wants to
not
be a teacher.
Yeah, right. And she's happy being a teacher, right? She's happy in her little world.
She is. And now we know when you look back, look at
right,
what she
now
risked.
You understand why.
Right.
Now look at the risks she went through, but for her queen and to save Shuri and everything, like she left her son. I mean, not in a bad way, but I mean, to save Shuri, she risked dying and not being able to raise him. So.
Can someone explain
Vin
to
Diesel
me?
Vin Diesel does that every time.
Well, yeah.
Can someone explain to me how she would learn the language of not Atlantis, this community that
that's
no
a good
one
question.
Had ever heard of?
Yeah,
I was
10 minutes
maybe,
previous.
I remember. I was thinking that maybe it's just a more
I think it's Spanish.
It wasn't Spanish because there were two different colors. On
yeah,
the
they had different
subtitles.
Colors for the subtitles. So in Wakanda,
and she would switch languages. But there were
was
people
it yellow
above,
and yeah,
there were people above ground who still spoke that language. So I thought maybe it was just a more traditional language.
It must be based on the Aztec. See. I'm guessing that it's based on that
but
language.
I would still think that after all that, after 500 years in an isolated community or 700, it's going to mutate.
I can see. I can see that. Yeah, I think you're just led to believe that when they left the, you know, when they left to go form Telecon, that they brought the language, just like things evolved from.
Yeah,
it didn't change that much.
Yes, I took it as that she is that good. That she could, you know, not that she could read like a book on this language, not the language of Talokan, but
Talokan?
No, we're not doing
Talokan,
it.
Let me rock you, Talokan.
I just kind of think she is that good of an infiltrator and that good of a spy that she can pick up on things like that. But I do agree that like she picked up on that real quick.
Yeah,
real
quick. Like what do we see? Oh, Black Adam. He was like, how did you learn English that fast?
But
like,
that's part of his powers.
What?
That's part of his power.
Everyone from Wakanda is really, really smart, guys.
But in Black Adam.
Why is that so hard for you?
You're racist.
Sorry. So now, you know, Lupita Nyong'o rescues Riri and Shuri, and they head back. Takes them home, and now we are at war. Like, that's now that... Namor has basically declared war on Wakanda, and in a ridiculously amazingly filmed scene,
blood sequence,
he wipes out Wakanda, not takes them all out, but it's definitely sends a message and says, this is what I can do with a fourth of my power.
Yeah.
Like, if either you give me the scientist or I am going to drown this entire city. And there's nothing you can do to stop me.
Well, and here's the deal with why I have a problem with when they make these villains anti-heroes, and then they try to bring him onto the team. I mean, he murders the queen.
He kills a lot of people.
He does murder the queen of Wakanda.
You know, yeah. The innocents died, and he kills the queen. He kills Shuri's mother.
I don't disagree, but in fairness, how many deaths is the Stark family responsible for?
Lots.
You're right. It is a similar question.
And there is a truce, right? That at the end of this movie, there's a truce that is made that kind of absolves him from that.
Well, that's kind of the theme of the whole movie is forgiveness.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Instead of revenge.
Exactly. So no, I mean,
maybe that's
the point
moment
they
at
made.
The end there where she decides, you know what? Yeah. We're done fighting.
No, you're right. That is the point they're trying to make, certainly. And I agree, the forgiveness and not going after revenge and everything. I mean, they're hammering out good points. But
it makes for boring movies.
And on a human level, it's hard. Like, whenever these superheroes fight side by side with the people that murdered their friends and family, but they're reformed, it's just like, I just don't know how. It just makes it really hard, I think, to root for them. You know, with Tony Stark, I get there's a similarity there, but there's also this, like, indirect, like, you know, he took over his father's company, and Tony Stark didn't go and murder someone in front of them. You know what I mean?
He did sell them the Jericho missiles.
It's not good, but you don't connect the dots the same way because it's like we see Namor cause death and destruction, and then if he's just going to team up with the Avengers, it's like, but you just killed all those innocent people. It's just really hard to wrap your head around, I think.
It is true.
Forgiveness is one thing, but like friendship and team up is another, and it's just, you know.
Again, we just need to go back to the Fast and Furious movies because this happens all the time.
Family.
It's just fine.
See?
The villains become the heroes.
That's right, right. Wait, we have Jason. We have Jason Statham? Well,
right.
You gotta make him a hero. He did murder Han. No, he didn't.
True. But to be fair, did I not have the exact same problem with Fast and Furious and Jason Statham?
Yeah,
right.
These people just killed his brother. He just killed their friend, supposedly, until they retcon. Like, it's really hard to team up with people that just brutally murdered in cold blood your friends and family. So.
You know when Statham turns in that performance, they're like, God damn it. Now we got to turn him.
We
can't get rid of him now, son of a bitch.
Yeah, it's just tough when you end up with good characters and actors attached to them.
Exactly.
That you want to keep them around. And you want people to cheer with them and vote with them.
So we should say that this entire time, Martin Freeman is back as not a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, but a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent.
And has a sort of partner. That's a spoiler, right?
Oh, you mean like a life partner?
Yeah.
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 The big reveal is that Julia Louis-Dreyfus's character, who we've seen, I guess we first saw her in Captain America and the Winter Soldier. Is that when we first
see
her?
Yeah,
and she's recruiting the Thunderbolts is what she's doing, which is the bad Avengers, basically. Or the Avengers without morals.
They said that.
Oh, I thought the Justice Society was the bad Avengers.
That's different. No, that's fair. That's a different, all different altogether. Yeah.
What did you guys think about these scenes? At the time, I thought they were kind of fun. And in hindsight, do they have to add anything to this movie other than setup or something else?
Not really.
I think they're fun. You know, it's one of those things where I think Julia Louis-Dreyfus is so good at being very nice.
She's just fun to watch anyways.
She is amazing to watch. And you know, right, if she's the new Nick Fury, she's not dumb, you know, like the entire time when you know she is setting Martin Freeman up every step of the way. She's not an idiot.
Right.
So when the reveal happens that she's like, okay, so tell me about the beads. And he's like, what beads? She's like, the ones I planted, you dumbass. Like, come on. What did you think?
He's like, wait, were you going through my nightstand? The Wakanda beads.
Oh, the Wakandan beads.
That's what I thought we were talking about.
That's
the
what
whole
we
time,
thought
ma'am.
We meant.
So he tipped off Shuri about Riri, and then she puts him in jail for treason.
She's not wrong, though.
I mean,
he did commit treason.
He owes them his life, so he felt obligated to help them out. But it is against national interest, even if the national interest isn't good. You know, I mean, like, even if they're trying to get vibranium for weapons and stuff, it's like, well, that's the law. So.
That's the law. Yeah. But I think setting her up as now we know just how powerful she is.
Yeah.
So when the Thunderbolts happen, you know.
Well, we're getting Secret Invasion first, right?
And that'll be the Nick Fury-centered one.
Right, but no, Martin Freeman's in that.
Yes, yes. But I don't know, like, if it's going to follow the storyline from the comics, which is that half of the Marvel heroes that we knew were Skrulls.
Yeah.
So that's...
They did say that Valentina was his ex-wife, right? They used to be married. That was, okay, so we didn't know that. That was a weird connection.
Like, so in the comics, and she's Nick Fury's ex-wife.
And importantly, we find out that apparently he owns a Peloton.
I thought of you immediately.
Yeah.
Very important to one of us here.
Yeah, right.
Maybe I'll come over and hop on your Peloton. You know what I mean?
I was like, oh, okay, product placement. Check. Got it. So, yeah, so that's
that
a
was not
different...
a product placement. They were unaware.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, dang.
We
so that's
them.
A little so that's a little like subplot that's going on that doesn't really go anywhere, but it does kind of give her a little bit more to do because she has been the Nick Fury style character since Winter Soldier or Captain America and the Winter Soldier, building that team up.
I did really enjoy the Okoye and Martin Freeman, their little and forth banter and her saving him and everything. I mean, I enjoyed that part, but plot wise, I mean, it wasn't a huge addition to the film.
I think that's maybe a Marvel special edition that could have been, you know?
Yeah.
Which, by the way, Werewolf by Night is amazing. Go watch it. It's great.
So Namor says you got a week. Like, join us or burn. That's it. So we're taking on the land world. You guys can team up with us or we can. Your Wakanda is going to be the first to go. And he's saying this as, you know, Ramonda's face down in the water.
Face down
over here.
In the water,
I mean, she drowned trying to save Riri. Or was it not? Was it Riri? Yeah, Riri was in the place where there are the... Wakanda floods, and then she uses her last strength, I guess, to swim up and to put her, you know, above the water, and she ends up dying. And so now, you know, they're mourning the death of T'Challa from just a year ago, and now Shuri has no one left. It's her, and
she's in the exact same position that Angela Bassett had just described, right?
Right.
Like, she's lost everything.
Right. So, yeah, she has nothing.
And by the way, we are now halfway through the movie.
We'll breeze through most of this.
I just mean what we were talking about how it does.
It's long. It's long for sure.
Here's how we do this, and then they win. Okay, coming up next week.
Next week we'll talk to you about the new Ralph Fiennes movie.
But basically, they set up a trap for Namor.
First we got to say that Riri figures, or not Riri, but Shuri figures out that
they end up creating.
They create
the serum, soldier serum.
The super soldier serum. Yeah, right. They figure out that the vines in this bracelet that Namor gave to Shuri has the same properties. So she, you know, sciences her way and figures it out. And she takes this. I think this is one of the best cameos in the MCU. You know, when the Black Panther takes the serum,
the second Michael B. Jordan cameo in a year, right?
What was the one
before? Are you sure this has been released? Oh, in a different... Okay, sorry.
Oh.
I'm like, are you sure you haven't seen something that we haven't seen? I don't remember.
I was like, oh, God, cut that out.
Yeah.
I seriously thought in that moment, what are we about to do?
I thought the same thing.
I
thought they might do it, man.
I thought they might.
In Space Jam 2, which... did we cover that?
We did.
That was horrible. Yeah. Okay. Horrible, horrible movie. I thought maybe that was the best part of the entire movie. If there
was, that was
anything,
when
you think it's going to be Michael Jordan and it's Michael B. Jordan, that was about the only clever thing that movie did. So anyway,
I agree though, Rick. There's a moment where the Black Panther sees the one person that's going to set them on the right course.
Right.
And
Shuri's overwhelmed with anger and wants revenge, and so she doesn't see who we thought. I mean, you would think maybe she's going to see T'Challa somehow. Maybe
that's what we're saying. I thought we might be doing this. Like, oh, we're going to bring him back.
Knowing how Marvel loves that de-aging tech and deep fakes and all that stuff,
I thought they were holding it because we didn't see him even, you know, the mention of his death. Everything was off screen. I thought, are they holding the last footage or whatever for this moment? Mm. But then it was like more likely maybe it's going to be her mom. But no, it's Killmonger.
No, it's Killmonger.
Because she has this rage and passion, you know, she wants revenge, so she ends up seeing him, and he's been
great.
And he gives a performance, dude.
He's still so good.
I love him in that first movie. I think, and that's another one, right? That's the villain where you're like, I mean, he's not wrong.
You did kill his dad.
I mean, and you left him, right? Like T'Chaka could have came and adopted him, brought him to Wakanda. I mean, this is what he's so mad about. And no, he leaves him to, you know, out to dry. And so, like, you get the motivation. Again, like we said with all these villains, Thanos, whatever, they're going about it a wrong way. You can't go murder innocent people. But their motivation, you understand why the character's angry, and you understand where they're coming from, and it makes them interesting, complex characters.
I do like the line that he has where, I mean, Killmonger basically says, your brother brought the man that murdered your father to live on Wakanda, that murdered T'Chaka and lived here. I was like, oh yeah, he did live there. I forgot about that. That's totally
the
right.
Other one where it's just like, yeah, I mean, we all love Bucky, but it's like, you know, but he was brainwashed. So I guess you get it. It's a little bit different.
He did murder the Starks and the king of Wakanda, but you know,
but the brainwashing,
he's the leader of the Thunderbolts now. Cool. Yeah.
But it's at the very least a red flag.
Yeah, big time, big time. And she comes back and she's pissed and she's angry and she doesn't think that it worked. And then she throws something across the room and everybody in the room's like, well, I think it worked. And the scene that I thought was super interesting is she's looking at, I guess that was definitely T'Challa's helmet and T'Chaka's helmet.
Yeah, you've got the
and
two
she
Black
walks
Panthers.
Past. She walks past it and picks up Killmonger's helmet. And I was like, oh, damn.
Oh, was it?
I thought she synthesized her own.
I thought it was one for her.
Yeah.
That was there. She does make her own, but she doesn't touch T'Chaka's or T'Challa's. She picks up Killmonger's.
Really?
And then if you look at the...
Oh, it changes it with the beads and stuff.
Yes. If you look at the colors of her suit...
He was a black and gold one, wasn't he?
He was black and gold, and there was definitely more like jagged teeth and like more of a fierce look.
I didn't pick up on that, but you're right. I remember now that he had the black and gold color.
Yeah.
And that is what she
adopts. And then you look at her suit, and it doesn't have like the fangs or the fierceness on the in the teeth or whatever, but it does have sharper edges and gold in there. I was like, oh, what a crazy move if they make her like the villain.
Yeah.
More like, and she is more like Killmonger the entire time up until
she's driven by rage and revenge, as opposed, and that's what she has to learn by the end is the forgiveness. That's the whole thing is she, you know, ends up with, spoilers, a spear at Namor's throat. She could kill him, but obviously that's not the path that they're going to send her down.
No, she offers him a truce.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, she becomes the Black Panther.
They set them up. They bring another, I guess, Riri made another vibranium detector, and they think, oh, they're at it again, coming for our vibranium. But it's actually the Wakandans, and they're all on a huge ship, and they're there to, you know, lure Namor out. And Shuri, as Black Panther, basically takes him to the driest desert.
She puts him in a ship and sucks all the moisture out, and weakens him basically.
Yeah.
He can't get
so him. Well, so now, my question was
congrats to your future husband.
Whose idea was it to drive a boat out into the middle of the ocean and fight ocean people?
I did think that. I was
boat.
Like, that seems kind
like,
of
at the very worst
counterproductive.
Kick them off and they're gonna land. And they're gonna
I think
climb
it was
back.
The yeah, no, I mean, obviously they went into their territory, which gives them the advantage. I think it was the only way to lure them out, though, because they can't go down to them where they have this massive army. And the only way to bring them up was to pretend like they were drilling the vibranium.
I mean, I've seen Wakanda flying ships before. They could have just floated them all over to the desert or something.
No, I mean, you bring valid points. But anyway, but so their weapons are all made of vibranium, which is one reason why these Namor's people are so strong. And he's able to get right through her ship, and he deactivates the whatever thing that was keeping him depowered, and then basically crashes the ship, and she ends up bringing him to the desert, though, where it's still very dry. And
did you guys catch, by the way, the way they were trying to suck his powers out was the heat, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And earlier in the scene when they were kidnapping Riri, she was like, what are you going to kill him with, a heater?
Oh, that's nice callback.
That's pretty good.
That was not me. That's from Reddit. But I'm not that smart.
But they're on the desert fighting, and he pretty much has her dead to rights. I guess the only thing
stabs her.
Like, I mean, to me, it seemed like he had the upper hand. He had her, again, dead to rights. The spear is through her side. And they did this thing where, and you know, in movies where the good guy overcomes things, and it just, I don't know, to me it felt a little cheap, where she's just like, oh yeah, let me just slice this off. Let me pull myself off the spear. I mean,
she's been impaled. Like,
the only thing I could think is like the suit
Right, is healing her nanotechnology, at least yes. patching her up a little bit.
I just wish that's they kind didn't of put what her I in thought. That losing position. We know they're not going to kill her off.
Also,
so.
Also, put some blood on that spear.
That's the thing.
It's PG-13, man.
I know, man. I totally hear you.
There's no red blood inside the Black Panther anyway.
Yeah.
Purple. Oh, yeah, right. Sure,
but they're spearing people. They're killing them. The Wakandans, the Namor's people, again, I don't know what the people are called, but his army,
Talokanians.
They are killing people in this fight, and you never see blood in the whole thing. And it is weird seeing someone impaled like that, though, without a drop of anything. Yeah. You know, but I mean,
the one thing we didn't talk about is Winston Duke returning M'Baku. As M'Baku. Yeah.
He's so good.
Who's kind of like the consigliere to Shuri at this point. But the scene that gives you an idea of how strong Namor is M'Baku is just like, yeah, man, I'm going to go kill the fish guy. And he, you know, uses his weapon and it breaks over the back of Namor, and Namor doesn't flinch.
He just turns through his armor.
Yeah,
like,
which I think is such a great scene. And it's funny, we kind of bagged on Black Adam about the slow-mo action sequences, and I was like, there's a lot of that in this movie, but it's way better done here. Like, it's not as egregious, but he does, and I think Ryan Coogler may have even said, like, he's stronger or as strong as the Hulk and Thor, which makes sense. Like, the reason Aquaman is as strong and bulletproof as he is because he lives on the bottom of the ocean and his skin is stronger.
Have you seen those weird fish that live on the bottom of the ocean? Like, if you're going to survive
the angler fish, yeah, those are weird.
You got to be pretty.
But he's saying that, like, that's why he's as strong as he is because of
the pressure he lives under.
Yeah.
We all live under pressure, though. Think how strong Freddie Mercury must be in the Marvel Universe.
That's great. Right. Same joke. That's so good. Not Vanilla Ice, though, because he ripped it off.
But so Namor, he's...
I think I got to jump, because I have to still finish packing and then check out and catch a flight. So
sure.
Do it.
So I didn't want to just disappear on you. I'm sure I'll be missed.
Thank you.
Rick, it was nice meeting you.
Yes, thank you, Tom. Thanks so much.
Enjoy yourself.
Zoomophonically. Though. Yeah. No, because I at least acknowledged it. I could have just went, like, leave.
Yeah, you know, see. Yeah. Bye.
See cool. ya. Have a good flight.
Thanks. See you later.
Be safe. Bye.
So basically, Namor is depowered, like we said. Shuri she finds the strength. She pulls herself off the spear, and she's got Namor dead to rights. She's got a spear pointed at his throat, and
yeah, she's got him.
Can kill him. And you see a flash. This was weird because I go, are we in a simulation? The way they reversed things was a very weird choice.
Play everything back,
but they played it backwards. I've never seen. You see tons of movies, right, where they play back things you've seen in a forward-moving regular motion. Why did they reverse the flashbacks?
Kevin, that was my movie.
What's that?
Did you guys watch mine? Remember, we're going to talk about that later. Yeah. Well, I did the same thing, and when I saw it in Black Panther, I was like, dang.
But what came out
3 weeks before.
But what was the storytelling reason? Because to me, when you reverse something, I go, is this a simulation? Is she making a decision that would lead to war? She's going to choose a different path.
Oh.
Like, I need to understand the story reasons for doing it. And you may have, you know, different people may have different reasons for that technique. But I did not understand the choice in Black Panther.
I have to watch it again to see, because... Yeah,
they undid
sure.
the destruction, because I guess maybe it was just an interesting choice, like, rather than seeing. But they show all the destruction.
Yeah,
she's trying
they
to
do.
Play
you're
back
right.
What
she's,
Namor
everything
did.
Is? And it, Superman won it.
She undid it, right? But it wasn't really. It was just her memories in reverse. And I thought, what a weird way to remember the things that have happened, because she can't undo it.
I wonder if it was a way to get back to T'Challa, because he's the last thing that she sees, right?
Yeah, maybe just it's a way to show them moving back, but I don't know. I just didn't understand the choice, but again, it could have just been an artistic choice that wasn't trying to, like, plot-wise, because I think, you know, but when I watched it, though, I go, oh my gosh, everything we just watched, all the death, all the war, it's not real. Like, they just...
that would have been, like, the biggest FU to the film watcher if all of a sudden they're like, by the way, everything you just watched, all that emotion you just put into that doesn't exist.
I mean, it wouldn't undermine everything, but if she had to make a choice and it went back to the point where she had to go down a different path, is she going to be Killmonger? Is she going to be...
Well, then we do see... Yeah, I guess that's true. But then we do see Angela Bassett. She does have another, like, a Panther vision And it's Angela Bassett, and she, you know, gives her the talk, and this is where Shuri says, look, to Namor, you yield right now, and Wakanda will do everything we can to keep you safe. We're not going to attack you. You know, we're on the same page. And he yields. And I will say there's a moment where he does say Imperius Rex, which I was like, that's pretty dope, because that's his little catchphrase in the comics. Like, that's his call to arms, basically, when you know it's about to get real for Namor. And when he does says it here, I was like, and it was understated, like it's under his breath.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's pretty good. And just as the Wakandans, who are, you know, they've the not Atlanteans have killed all of the Wakandans except for the ones that we know.
Okoye's army has these pretty dope suits that Shuri was designing throughout film.
Yeah.
And they give them super strength, and they're kind of like Iron Man-esque, you know, they're flying around, and they're pretty cool looking armor. And I think Okoye is pretty hesitant. We see her with different electricity daggers and things. You know, they want the spear. They all get the spear when they join this army. It's a big ritualistic type thing, and they have their ways, and so she's more set in those ways and doesn't want all the technology. But to fight these Talakians, whatever we're calling them, fight the army, they have to step it up. And so they eventually bring out those suits, and Ironheart's there fighting
In her not Iron Man suit, which I thought was pretty great. So then they call it off. Yeah. And everything kind of is okay, right? They're rebuilding Wakanda.
So this was an interesting ending, though, because I thought, man, she's putting a lot of trust in this guy who seems fine. You know, like they show up on the plane, like standing next to each other. Hey, we just had a fight to the death. And yeah.
She
both alive, but
she had this
guys,
dagger to my throat
because we have reached an agreement.
Right, it's always a weird thing whenever the hero lets the villain, you know, so to speak, if we're putting him in those terms, live, right? Because
and not put them in jail or something.
That's what I'm saying, right? And that was the same thing I said. Like, it's one thing to not kill the person, because our heroes don't kill people, right? That they need to face justice, they need to be in prison, they need to answer for their crimes. But when you just let them go and you're like seeing they're going to team up someday, it's just weird that they don't have to actually answer.
The more
for
I
their
thought
crimes.
About it, though, I kind of liked it because it sort of speaks to the character of Namor that he really is trustworthy like this. He has a word that he gives and he honors that, and he even goes down to the people, you know, his people later, and he says, look, I made a decision that day, and this is going to be better for us. I have my reasons.
Namora is not happy with it.
Yeah. Well, so I think once he explains, he's like, look, I bend the knee to Wakanda, but there's going to come a point where they're going to need us, because now they have opened the door to the surface world. They know that all of this exists, and the humans are not going to stop. And there's going to come a point when Wakanda's going to come to us for help. And then we've got them.
But what's his end game? He just still kind of seemed kind
again,
of villainous,
though,
right?
I still like his character, though, because...
No, I agree.
He's not in this just to fight, you know? He has reasons, and he could very easily turn on somebody, but right now, at least, I take him at his word that he...
He'll honor the agreement
his agreement.
I agree. There is just something about when he's painting and Namora comes in all mad, I can't believe you did this, whatever. And he's like, oh, they'll need us. There's something a little mustache twirling about that. And I just
That's Namor, right? Namor,
you're right.
His main focus, his main goal is to protect the water.
Yeah.
That's his goal. And sometimes he will do what he needs to do to get to that end game.
Clearly.
If striking a deal with Wakanda to keep his people safe is what he needs to do, then he'll do it. Yeah. But that does not mean Wakanda is out of the frying pan yet.
Right.
You know? So there is no post-credit sequence. There is a mid-credit sequence.
Oh, you guys sat and watched the whole thing, though.
I did. Right? God damn it.
Our whole theater did. And then nothing comes up.
No, the Black Panther will return. I was like, come on!
I looked it up before, and I had to go pick up my son for school, so we were like really close on time. So like I had to bolt, so I looked it up. Usually I stay, but I was like, is there no? And they said it because the after credit scene is always the comedy scene. The mid credit is setting up.
I guess that you can't really do
with
that.
The tone,
I guess that
yeah.
makes sense.
Yeah.
So
that's
it's,
what we talked about earlier. It's T'Challa has a son.
Yeah. So. Shuri goes to Haiti to finish the ceremonies. We're a year later, and part one of the ceremonies that is referenced is you burn the ritual, like, outfit that you wore to your loved one's funeral a year later as like a way of closure. And Shuri wouldn't burn the one she wore to T'Challa's funeral. So here we are at Haiti, you know, in Haiti. We've got Lupita Nyong'o and
Nakia.
Nakia, thank you. And Shuri. And Shuri's like, let me do it by myself. And Nakia says, okay. So she's out there burning it. And then Nakia sits down, and this is the reveal, right? Is that here comes this little boy, and same deal. As soon as he walks up, you're like, I know who that is.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Right. I know exactly who that is.
I want you to meet your aunt.
I just want you to say it out loud. Let me hear it.
Just say it. Please just say it. And the kid gives a killer line read. Like, he's just like, you know, he's very sweet and he's very earnest. And I think he says that, you know, she's like, you've got a, you know, this is your Aunt Shuri. And she's like, oh, you've got a cool name. And he says his name, and he's like, but that's not my name. And then he says his name is T'Challa. And I was
That's when my theater had some applause and some cheers.
Oh, yeah. There was definitely like you could hear people starting to cheer, but then it like went right back down. Like, it was very quick. And, you know, Marvel said, we're not going to recast Chadwick Boseman. So now they've got.
That's a smart way to not recast. It's a brilliant way to not.
You still got a T'Challa. You can still tell Black Panther stories. You could set
15 years from now.
Bingo. And you've got a 25-year-old.
We're almost in real time, right? They fast forward a little bit, but they're pretty close. And for this to be such a young kid, I just don't know how they're going to.
They can do whatever they want. They can say Black Panther. I mean, Shuri is the Black Panther for now. And then Black Panther 3 is set 20 years later.
But then you're 20 years later. I'm just saying, with the timelines and everything moving together pretty close to real time, in order to bring him in, you're going to either
What's on the schedule? Is there a Black Panther 3 on the schedule already?
No,
because if not, we might be waiting 10 or 12 years anyways.
right. And that's how it ends. I think this is one of my top 5 Marvel movies.
Like, I enjoyed it.
I think this is fantastic.
I think they took a lot of risks doing a movie like this, not just hammering you with the action. They deal with grief and loss, and they live in that. And the characters, it's downbeat. They're going through it, but it's also relatable. And I think that they took a big risk in making a big blockbuster like this, and I think it paid off. I give them credit for their ambition with making something so different, and I think given the circumstances, they did a really great job.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
I'm not sure I like this one quite as much as the first Black Panther.
No, I'm in the same boat. Yeah,
But I think a big reason was because your two leads in that movie aren't here. Yeah. And it makes a
totally
huge
fair.
Difference. The charisma that they bring and the roles that they bring.
Yeah,
it is.
And you couldn't have made it any other way, but you're just not going to have them back.
I think this is like the movie that you go, that was really good, and I don't need to watch that again. Right? Like, I thought this was really good, but it's not a fun enough movie where I'm always going to want to watch Black Panther 2. Where the first one, I think you can get more of a rewatch. It's just, this is the type of movie that just isn't, you know what I'm saying? It's not, I'm not saying that
I gotta respectfully disagree. I think this
one, that's fine.
Maybe not, I'm not going to come back to this one as often as I come back to Civil War or.
That's what I'm saying. I just don't think it has the rewatch value.
Oh, I think it does.
There's really good movies that you don't watch every year. You know
what
I mean?
Yeah.
It's just, again, the movie's really good and they did a great job with it, but I think that it just doesn't have that rewatch value that Marvel movies generally do, where you throw it on because they're fun, right? This movie has some fun in it, but because it's so downbeat,
Do you rewatch The Eternals?
I would rewatch The Eternals. I think,
but The Eternals is not fun. There's no fun in that movie at all.
I can definitely see the similarities. I do think it's more fun than this one, but
I hear you. But Kevin, what you're saying is the same thing I brought up earlier. Where, dude, this movie was fantastic, but you're comparing it to even more fantastic movies. It's just so hard.
Yeah, agreed. But they did a great job, really. Ryan Coogler is a hell of a director.
Oh, man.
And you didn't mention earlier, you mentioned you have to deal with the passing and comparing it to James Wan and dealing with Paul Walker's death. You also didn't mention you've got the death of Chadwick Boseman, you've got COVID, and then you've got Letitia Wright getting injured. I mean, Ryan Coogler.
I mean, that wasn't the only issue.
Some Twitter issues there.
Yeah. Well, right. But I mean, But seriously, you're facing, he is facing an uphill battle with this one, and
big time,
huge uphill battle. And the fact that it came out and was handled so beautifully, again, all the respect and admiration. Ryan Coogler is a brilliant director, and you know,
yeah, I agree. What's their next thing? Do they have something? Oh, it is Ant-Man. You're
this
right.
is the end of Phase 4, right?
This is the end of Phase 4.
And there's no Avengers or anything, so it's just starts Phase 5, I guess.
So Phase 5, I guess that makes sense because that is definitely heavy with Kang and the whole shebang, which I have not watched any of those trailers until I saw the one at the beginning of this one, and I was like, what a crazy tonal shift that series right. has had. That's it's, I mean, and in the best, I love Paul Rudd. I think that movie looks a lot of fun, but I don't know what it is going to be.
Yeah, we'll see. I think anytime
Michelle Pfeiffer's on the big screen, I'm in.
But at this point, Joe, I think you better keep your reservations of, well, this could be the one. I think
I've given up, man. Like they're just like, hey, we're going to do Werewolf by Night.
Yeah.
And it's going to work.
It's all going to work.
It's all going to work. We got the
holiday special coming up. I can tell you right now that's going to work. I mean, I haven't seen it, but I just know it's going to work. Guardians 3.
Kevin Bacon, baby.
Oh, it's good stuff coming up. So,
speaking of coming up.
Yeah, so let's talk about the movie that you just directed, Rick. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, well, this is sort of why talk to you guys. I'm trying to get it out there a little bit, but
oh, wait a minute! You didn't just come on because you love us. You have something to push. Oh.
I do, but you know, I'm always trying to synthesize. Like, what can I do?
No, tell us about it.
So this was always a bucket list item for me. Was just I want to direct something. So we did it. If you're into low budget or even micro budget movies and listen to that kind of stuff, you hear the advice that gets thrown around all the time is just do it, just make it. Don't wait for anybody else to do it for you. So that's what we did. And we shot at 2 miles from my house and 30 miles from where all these huge movies are shot.
did you just like leave the door of the Marvel Studios unlocked and like come in and use the set at night or something?
Man, I can't tell you how many times I've thought like they have all this space right here and I'm friends with so many of these people. What if I could just like get in there?
They've got this huge 360 degree screen I can put any backgrounds on.
Heidlen Studios, you probably don't know this. Well, actually it was renamed to Trilla Studios, but when it was built right next to a school, which was like an elementary school, which was only used open for like a year or two. And then they took over the school and turned it into production offices, but it still looks like a school. Okay. You know, it's like hallways and the urinals are down to your ankles because they're for little kids the water fountains you got to lean over and drink from.
Right.
A bunch of the Spider-Man school stuff is shot in that school.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, no, that's kidding. Awesome.
So that's fun. Even though it's like a studio, there's still like other things there
that's hilarious.
Play for other things.
lockers and such, like down the hallway.
I've thought about that before. Like, could I at least get in the production offices?
Right? That's funny. So tell us about your film.
But so this is a movie. It's called Solid Rock Trust. And we were talking a little bit about before we started recording. But obviously, I had a budget and I wrote this with a budget in mind because so many of the movies that I edit, I'm an assistant editor for Marvel, but I edit, you know, on the side for other features because I'm interested in that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So many of them, I think, fail when it comes to their production quality because they're trying to do locations like all the other movies and huge casts like all the other movies, and they just don't have the money to do that. So my idea was, what if we took that same budget and made it look like an independent movie instead of a micro budget movie, which is what a lot of those end up looking like. And so I wrote this thing to take place in one room. It's a bank heist. It's a drama. It's a thriller. I got all that in there, except we kind of stick to that place. And it is a genre movie, right? So it's a bank heist genre. And if you like those kind of movies, you're going to see all the points that you hit in those movies.
Oh, yeah.
Double crossings. Romantic scenes and gunfire and all that stuff. Except the trick here is, we're only hearing it over the phone because we're with the woman in the chair for the whole movie and she's orchestrating this whole thing.
You know what it reminded me of now? What's the one that they just remade with Jake Gyllenhaal? Did you watch that one?
Yeah. I watched that after I was done with this one. I mean, I saw the trailer for that. And I thought, I'm making this movie right now.
Yeah, I'm not trying to say like, you know,
it's totally the same thing.
But he's a phone operator for 911, or he's a cop that gets put on the phone and has to talk through these things going on. And so you've seen these movies get made recently, and on paper, sometimes you're like, how will that work? But when you have the writing that works like it does in your film, when you have the writing and the characters that are saying the right things, that can paint the picture, but then also equally important, not only is what you're hearing the characters say, but the person on the receiving end, like your lead actor who has to take all this information and react to it, right? If you don't have the person that is the caliber that can do that, and you've seen some really big actors do it, you've seen Tom Hardy in Locke, you've seen Jake Gyllenhaal in the Norwegian remake of the Norwegian movie. I can't think of the name of the movie for some reason. But you've seen these big name actors do it.
I think it was called The Guilty. And then there was another one Ryan Reynolds was in.
Ryan Reynolds
Buried,
Buried.
Where it's just him in a coffin.
Man, hey, that one there, boy.
Woo. Same thing. You tell people this whole movie takes place in a coffin. You're like, how though? You can't do a movie that way.
And then you watch it. You're like, oh, that's how.
But you can. You know, you can.
And so the point is, though, you listen to those movies. And I think the reason why they get sold is because people are like, how do you do that? And they're like, oh, we'll get this big actor. And you have to have a really good actor to do it. So they only work if your lead is compelling and able to handle that. And what is the name of your lead actor?
So her name's Coco Marshall.
OK,
she kills it, man.
She does a really good job.
So you hit the nail on the head because you're. I mean, I even knew going into this is going to be a tough sell because how can you watch a movie in one room? So I was in the script phase. I was throwing everything I could at it, you know, with plot twists and interesting things happening out on the other end. And then one of the things I put in was that this woman would have a bunch of different accents. And whoever she's talking to, she's playing a different person to them. So none of them know they're talking to all the
which was really a brilliant thing. I've never seen in a heist movie where the person for like, call it plausible deniability or whatever, like so that each person doesn't have so much information to implicate the others that would actually mislead on purpose in that way. Not in like, I'm going to steal all your money and screw you over way, but for the deniability.
In case anybody gets caught and they're just like, oh, I was talking to a Russian gal. I was talking to a British gal.
Right. Exactly.
That is a really unique idea. Did you get that from anywhere? Was that your...
I was just thinking, what could we do to pump this up and make it more interesting? Because we're just going to be watching her. Mm-hmm. So what could we do that would make an actress, you know, want to do this part and would be interesting for us to keep an eye on? So we went on this hunt for someone who we could afford, obviously, but who had this skill, right?
Does she know different languages or is she just good at accents?
Yeah, so she came into the... auditioned and I looked at her demo reel and she just knows all these accents and she speaks four languages.
That's awesome.
She's incredible. And in fact, I had less accents in the script and then she started bringing them to me and was like, hey, could I do this accent for this part and this accent for this part?
Can you throw like six more?
Please.
Can you throw six more phones? Can you throw six more phones on that desk there? Cause I got some accents for you,
buddy. I can't write all these people.
And so far, literally everyone who's talked to me about it afterwards is like, man, she is so good and her accents are so believable.
That's what I was impressed. I'm like, well, this is someone that obviously he found someone that can do accents. You didn't find just a good actor and you're like, hey, I need you to learn these. Like, she had the skill.
No, that was part of it going in. I was like, I know I'm looking for somebody who I'm going to enjoy watching on screen for this whole time and somebody who can do this in a way that's believable, you know. Yeah. Because you also don't want it to be bad, and then you're like, "Ah, you can't really."
Well,
I don't buy this.
And another movie that I'm thinking of, like 10 Cloverfield Lane, that all takes place in the same bunker.
Yeah, yeah.
The movie Room, right? For most of the time, is in a room. So they're and look at the actors involved: John Goodman, Brie Larson. Like, So she's walking amongst giants in these type of films. Like, you have to have an actor that's high caliber, and she does a really great job with it. And so the concept is really unique. And like you said, you might think, how can that work? How can you possibly do that? But we've just rattled off a whole bunch that are really good. And it just shows you the concept can work with the right writing and the right actors. And it's interesting. It's almost like whenever you do a movie like this or like The Guilty and those, it's almost like an audio drama brought to life because you're listening to a lot of it. But you get
so much of it is your imagination and you're picturing what is happening on the
internet. I will say there's a certain point in this, in your movie, that as I'm watching it, I was like, oh my God. Like, my blood would be boiling. I think you know what I'm talking about. Just
hopefully
having
a couple times.
There are, but there's one in particular where it's just like, all you can do is listen to it and best.
Yeah.
And, try to play it.
That was
it
part of it too, was it's sort of an experiment. And, you know, when you're sitting watching these movies, any movie, any action movie safely from your seat, you're still connected to those people and you're worried about them.
Yeah.
But this is one step even further removed because you're worried about her worrying about them.
Right.
And is that still going to work? Right.
Yes.
Do you care when you hear terrible things happening to someone you've never even seen before? You only
the answer
know their
voice. Is yes.
Yeah. It's cool. It's a really cool concept, and it's cool to take a bank heist to be listening to it in this way. It's just, I've never had a movie where usually you see the bank heist and you think of Heat or you think of Dog Day Afternoon, all these things, like you said, that you've added to the script that are some of the elements, but we've never had it described in this way and listened in on it. But
we play with that a little too in the dialogue at the beginning where she's talking about, you're not even here with us, you're over there.
Yeah.
She says something like, I've seen it all before. And that's my message to the audience. Like, exactly. We know you've seen this all before, but
you do a good job
in a different way.
Yeah. With the sound mixing and you hear gunfire at certain points. Like, I'm not going to spoil the plot, but you do hear some of that stuff. And I thought to myself, I'm like, wow, they did a really good job with the sound effects.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Thank
you. Yeah, no, it was, I agree that all those ones that we rattled off, I think are great. And I think this was also pretty fantastic.
Oh, and thank you.
I watched it, last night. But yeah, I think she is, you're absolutely right, is this movie, it hinges on her, and she delivers a pretty amazing performance.
And in hindsight, I feel so lucky that we found her, because, you know, you show up on day one, we only shot for like 11 days. So I'm doing like a lot of pages in a day.
Yeah.
If you know,
how many pages in a day are you doing?
A normal film, like, especially at Marvel, you're doing like 2-3 pages a day, maybe 4. If you're in an action sequence, it's even less, because you'll shoot, you know, a 3-minute action sequence in 3 days.
Sure, sure.
But we were doing like 10 or 12 pages in a day. And our biggest one was 20, which actually turned out to be the best stuff. It was in the later half of the movie when she's like really stressed out and tired. Like, we really did that all
Man,
at once. So
that's crazy. Well,
some of that isn't just performance, you know,
when you're talking about shooting all these pages in a day, like, I'm really thinking that's her doing. I mean, it's mainly her doing.
Exactly. That's what work. I mean. Is that's I felt, a, and we showed up on day one and she could just go for 15
that's
pages.
That's amazing.
Like, word, line by line by line, Damn. And not miss anything. And it was really just like us keeping up with her. Okay, we got it. Let's go to a different angle.
Nice. Well, so to get a little bit of a peek behind the camera again, when you're talking about all the people on the phones, like, did they do any of that live, or was it mixed in later? How did you do all that?
I was trying to figure out how I wanted to do that, because you don't just want to have someone who's not an actor on set like feeding her lines, because then you miss out on performance stuff.
Right.
And this was also happening during COVID. So we were kind of limited in what we could, you know, the groups of people we can get together, and we're trying to avoid all that kind of stuff. So my idea was, what we're doing right now is we did Zoom calls for the whole movie ahead of time.
Okay.
And we recorded her on her end and them on their end.
Good deal.
And we literally just went through one character at a time, all their scenes for a day, and then the next character, all their scenes for a day. The next character, all their scenes for
so
the day.
So they got to perform off one another.
And they were performed off one another. They could see their faces, and we, you know, talked through the scenes and made it all work.
That's cool.
And
because
then at the end of the day, I would edit it all together with her spaces still there. And I sent it all to her for her iPod. And while she was on the plane and when we had downtime or at night, she would listen to what she was going to act against on the next day.
That's cool.
Man,
and she had the whole thing memorized, and it was paced the way I wanted to already. And we just hit play on a speaker in the room, and she just like did it.
Cool.
I love that DIY stuff, man. That is
so
dope.
It worked out,
man.
It worked out so well, because she just knew line after line after line.
Sure, sure.
That's the question.
And really,
at that point,
it was less of a performance, you know, on the day. It's more like recreating the performance we had already decided on.
Right. Well, that's the thing. That's how you always wonder with movies when they're on phone calls, and your whole movie is basically on phone calls. And so it's a lot more, but you wonder, how are they doing that? Are they listening on the day of the performance? Are they recording it before and then like playing it back, like you were saying? So it's always a question of like, how does that even happen? And it's fascinating.
Usually they have the actors doing the voices, you know, in another room and making phone calls in, or at least, but we just couldn't make that happen.
No, that's understandable, no, but it works.
But it still worked out. Yeah. And in fact, I think it was for the benefit because part of the story is her disconnected from everyone else.
Oh, and sure.
Comes across where you want to see those people. You want to see them, but you can't because she's in a different place and she's powerless in a lot of ways.
True.
So that being said, it was tough. It was tough for her because how do you act when there's nobody there to act against?
And it's a valid point.
On day two, I was like, I realize what I'm asking of you because usually you're asking an actor to react and then say a line and react and say a line. But in this one, I have no one else to cut to. Mm-hmm. I'm just cutting to you. We're getting different angles, but you have to be reacting all the time because I can't just cut away from a bad performance, you know?
Yeah. No, that's really, really cool. So it's on Amazon right now. Is that the main way to watch it?
You can watch this on Amazon for rental. It's on rental right now or purchase. So it's on Amazon. It's on Google Play. It's on YouTube Movies. It should be on Tubi with ads. So you can watch it for free very soon, within maybe even a couple weeks.
Okay.
And then at some point it'll be on YouTube Movies through our distributor. They have their own channel. And then they're always looking for new places to put it. So I don't know, maybe one day it shows up on Roku or something. Yeah. But if you look for Solid Rock Trust on Google, you'll find all the places. And then if you look for Flashbulb Films, we're on Facebook, Twitter, Linktree, and you can find YouTube. You know, you can find the trailer and you can look for everything.
Awesome. We'll post a link to it too when we post the episode. Sure. So how did it feel directing your first feature, and is there anything on the horizon?
Any other projects? It was so fun. It's weird to sit in the editor, you know, assistant editor room on these big things day after day after day, and I love every second of it. It's one of those jobs where you pinch yourself, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Whenever it gets boring, like any job gets boring at
you're
3
just like,
but also look,
you look up and you're like,
look
what I'm
watching
Captain
right
now. Yeah, right. There's
everyone
Captain
in the
America's
world
shield.
Wants to see this stuff right now, and I'm watching it.
That is pretty cool.
But it was a strange feeling on the first couple of days to, you know, I've been writing this script for so long, and finally it's like right in front of you, and there's actors doing it, and there's lights look great, and the camera.
Yeah.
And man, coming to life, it's a unique feeling.
That's awesome, man.
We're just really proud of it. I think it turned out really, really well. I think you'll watch it and kind of forget you're watching an indie movie because it's different than most indie movies that you've seen.
You definitely have higher production value. I mean, and it, even though it is in the one location, though, you filmed that one location to the highest of your abilities, right? Like, it's,
and hopefully you forget that too. Like, you're just sucked into the story and you know where she is and you know what she's dealing with. And it's important to you as much as it is her, and you're along for the ride. And I've gotten that feedback from people that, man, I can't believe it just flew by. There's something always happening.
Well, they, again, through the writing and what's going on with all these different characters, you're invested in the characters. You're not thinking about how you're seeing the one location because you're painting this picture of the bank and of everything else that's going on. And so you really do kind of disappear into that.
I disagree, because I think that she is giving you a pretty good idea of what we're looking at, right? Because she's describing where people are supposed to be and things like that. So when, you know, I can picture this bank in my head because she is describing, there's a hallway here, there's a vault here, there's stairs here, there's this here. So I was like, I really appreciated that, because A, you don't have to film all that, and B, you're giving me enough of a description. I was like, okay, I think I know where we are
right
in this
right.
bank.
Yeah. And in a lot of ways, it is like a radio play that way. Yeah. Where you're just trusting the audience to fill in the gaps.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe I misspoke. I was saying, I think you forget that you're in one location because they do such a good job painting the picture of all the other areas. Yeah, I agree with that.
I got what you were saying, Kevin.
Yeah, I wasn't saying that you're just in one area. I totally agree. That's what I'm saying. So you did a really great job with it. People should check it out. I think it's like
$5
to rent or something on Amazon.
Yeah, it might be $4. I think it's weird. I'm just noticing now that the Amazon prices kind of fluctuate sometimes.
$4.50. Open $4.50. Take it or leave.
Yeah,
no, I'm just kidding.
And then if you do watch it, please, I would love for you to leave me a review or a rating somewhere, whether it's on Amazon or IMDb.
Yeah, awesome. Do you want to do another one? Are you, after doing this writing and directing? Is there?
Yeah. So I have a couple more scripts of various levels of budget that I would like to try to tackle, and the next one I'm thinking about doing a horror movie. I really like the horror genre.
Joe's ears just.
but giant, it would size, always, giant size man thing.
It would always be, I'm really interested in taking genres and kind of flipping them around. So whatever that is, that would still be my goal. You know what I mean? So this was a bank heist like you've never really seen. And I'd like to do a horror movie in that way where it's still scary. It still follows, you know, the tropes and stuff.
Yeah. But
would you make a Monster Squad 2?
I kind of like the Monster Squad movie.
You're goddamn you right. You like the Monster Squad.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Rick.
That's been the show. That was one I saw as a kid. And
of course,
I remember it. And then you guys would rag on that. You know, all the time.
Not you,
and
not you guys, not you guys.
The show as a whole,
and not the show as a whole.
Yes, no, it is the collective opinion of the show.
I didn't even like piece together that it was the same thing until I looked it up one day.
Wonderful.
Oh goodness, well,
funny.
Well, all right, well, Tom, take it away.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, no, thank you for joining us, Rick.
Rick, that was so good, man.
It was so fun to see you guys. Yeah, and it's been a dream.
Yeah, well, thank you for supporting the show, man. That's pretty dope. Yeah, thank you so much.
I need to do better at the League of Show Shares because I'm not very good at posting stuff on Facebook.
I mean, you could share
even for my
share
own
this
movie.
One.
I have someone to do that, but
yeah, start with
share
this
one.
And
well,
we
don't start.
We won't,
don't
we
start
won't
with this one because we won't read your name.
No, we need. But, he's on the show. He's got to share.
Oh no, that's fair. That's fair. Okay, sorry.
But I'll definitely share. Yeah, I could do better at that. But I am on your Facebook group, and I've chimed in there a couple times.
Yeah,
so maybe people recognize my name and stuff, but. Hopefully we can recruit some of them to check this one out.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for joining us. And, so
and thanks for bringing me on for a big episode too. Cause I know
Much
the Marvel stuff.
There you go. The Marvel bump.
That's right. That's right. Get that Marvel bump, baby.
Well, that's it for this episode. I don't know what's going on next week. And I certainly did not think of a spoiler to read. So until next time, bye.
You've been warned. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice. Cause we already
tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.